Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic Bee Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com.
Animals have a remarkable way of changing our lives and helping us to become better people. Cat lovers are probably my favorite and always have amazing stories to tell that uplift, inspire, and will touch your heart. On today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming Lissa Warren to talk about her best-selling book, The Good Luck Cat. So I'd like to welcome to the show Miss Lissa Warren. Good afternoon, Lissa. So wonderful to have you finally on the show.
Thank you.
Lissa, could you share a little bit about yourself with our audience?
Sure, you bet. I live in the Boston area. I've lived here for about 20 years. I'm originally from Ohio. I work in book publishing. I'm a book publicist by profession and also a professor at Emerson College here in Boston, where I teach in their writing, literature, and publishing program. And I am the daughter and very happy daughter of a wonderful woman named Donna and a wonderful guy named Jerry, who we lost back in 2008. And we all together raised a cat named Ting Pei Warren, who is a Kurat from Thailand.
Now, it's very interesting that you chose to adopt a Kurat and give it the name Ting. Can you share with our listeners about that adoption process and what happened that almost prevented the adoption from taking place?
Sure. We decided we wanted a purebred cat. We had had a purebred originally, a Burmese named Cinnamon, who lived to the age of 19, and she was wonderful, but we didn't want to get another Burmese because we felt like we had had our Burmese. So we started reading about other breeds and finally settled on a Kurat, which is a breed that looks a lot like a Burmese in a way, but very similar bone structure and body structure and size, but is gray instead of brown like our Burmese was. And Kurats are known as being these loyal, intelligent, wonderful animals. We wanted one. We called breeder after breeder asking if they had any Kurat females because we knew we wanted a girl. And asked if anybody had a runt of the litter, because we're all kind of tiny people and we wanted a little cat. We finally found a breeder, and she said that she had a female runt of the litter who would be available in a month or two for adoption. And so we claimed her, and we made arrangements to meet at a cat show in New Jersey to pick her up. But when we got there, unbeknownst to me, the breeder had shown her in the cat show that morning, and she had won ribbons. The breeder didn't think that she would win any ribbons, didn't think that she was a prize-winning cat, and then wanted to keep her. But I had driven all that way, and more than that, I had my heart set on this cat, and my parents were waiting at home for me to bring her back to them to be part of our family. So the minute I picked her up, she licked my nose, and the breeder realized that she was meant to be a Warren, as we say, and then I drove her home, and she's been with us ever since.
Lissa, could you share with our audience a little bit about your upbringing? What was your family like?
Sure. We're a small family. I'm an only child. My mother was also an only child. Because of that, we always have had animals in the house. They've always been a crucial part of our family. Originally, I had a dog named Oregano, a Cairn Terrier. That was my first animal in my family. And then I had a cat named Cinnamon, who was a Burmese, and then Ting, our Kurat. My parents are wonderful people, always very supportive of me growing up. It was very much an idyllic childhood, a quintessential middle American childhood. I grew up in Ohio.
How do you and your family view Ting?
We view her as a member of our family, as a companion, not someone who we own. And we do think of her as a someone, not a something. And she really is not a human to us, but almost like a person, certainly deserving of all of the attention of a person, all of the love of a person. A co-equal member of the family, I guess, would be one way to put it.
Now, it's interesting, Ting's behavior. Could you just share some of the funnier moments about Ting that I'm sure that our audience will completely understand and resonate with?
Sure. The first thing she did when we got her home was jump in the toilet. And we don't know what possessed her to do that, but she did. And then my mother and I decided that it wouldn't be good for her to bathe herself after being in the toilet, that she might get sick. So I went downstairs and put my bathing suit on and decided that I would try to take a shower with the cat to clean her off. And I don't know if you've ever tried to take a shower with a cat, but if you haven't, don't. It doesn't go well. She used my head as a springboard to get out of that shower as soon as she could. Who could blame her? She was also adept at what we liked to call redecorating, which is when she would take her claws and shred whatever she could get her little hands on, which was our couch, which was assorted clothing. And she also liked the cords of our very expensive custom-made blinds. She would treat them as dental floss. And she would chew through one after another, and then we'd get them replaced, and she'd chew through those. The only thing that stopped her from doing it is when my father taught her how to use dental floss. He would hold the dental floss up to her, and she would turn her head and gnaw on it, and that sort of took care of her fix, her need to chew whatever she could possibly chew. Those are just some of the antics of her when she was little. She mellowed as she got older, but she was a handful at first. We loved her,
and
though.
Your dad actually used to sneak off and buy mint flavored dental floss.
Yeah, because that was her favorite. She liked that better than the plain, so he would get the mint-flavored kind.
The listeners out there have similar things that they do that are very special and unique to their own cats. It's just interesting when you have different things that you do to please the cat in your life. So the dental floss, I thought that was hysterical. Now, in regards to her interacting with other cats, there was a point where you were actually considering taking out a personal ad. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we wanted very much for her to have some social interaction with other cats, but really, you know, it's hard to know how to find the right cat to share any kind of space, even if just for an hour or two, with your cat. So we didn't really, you know, truly contemplate taking out a personal ad. We didn't call a newspaper, but I would be lying if I said we didn't toy with the idea of what her personal ad could say. You know, very ornery female cat with occasional sweet tendencies, looking for mate for roughhousing and extra napping. You know, what would it say? But we kind of thought, gosh, how are we going to find another cat who she'll get along with? And frankly, in the end, we could not find another cat who she would get along with because she is not the kind of cat who wants to share her space or, more importantly, her people with another cat.
Now, you had a lot of different family traditions, especially since your mom was Catholic, your dad was Jewish, and it made for an interesting mix, especially when you consider Ting as part of the family. Could you share a little bit about your family traditions?
Sure. Well, yeah, it was kind of funny because Ting, being, you know, a cat from Thailand, I guess technically would be Buddhist, but she, a religious, my dad indeed was Jewish, my mom is Catholic, and so we would try every holiday season to honor and embrace both traditions. And so we would light the menorah. My father would be the one who'd light the candle, and he'd pass it to me, and I'd pass it to my mother. And we just had our little routine that we would use for that. But then we also had many Christmas traditions, including decorating the Christmas tree, of course. And that was something that Ting liked to be involved in. And she would try to shimmy her way up the Christmas tree, which was all well and good until the night that she actually made it to the top, just like a shining star, and unfortunately brought the entire tree down with her in the process. So that's just one of the Christmas antics that we had with her. But the holidays were never dull around my house, between celebrating the holidays of both religions and watching the cat destroy things. It was never dull.
you've had such a beautiful upbringing, just the surroundings, the way that you describe your home environment, and the love. There's so much love in your family with your mom, your dad, and also with you, and that's really evident in how you interact with Ting, who really is kind of the comic relief here because she's almost dictating what she wants, and it's quite interesting to see how the humans respond. Could you talk a little bit about what it was like to have that type of love in your life, and perhaps if you could share with the listeners what you would hope that they could feel if they were to adopt a cat in the same fashion?
Sure. You know, I think you never know how much you're capable of loving until you have an animal that depends on you, not only for its happiness, but for its very livelihood. You know, having an animal that relies on you for shelter, for food, for water, for medical care, for all of those things, it does help you to prioritize your life accordingly. And I'm the type of person who, if I need to take the cat to the vet because she's sick, I will call off work that day and make sure that she gets, you know, the attention that she needs and deserves. To me, you treat a pet like you treat a child. And really, I even hesitate to use the word pet because it sounds lesser than somehow to me. I think of her as a companion animal. And I would do anything that I needed to do to make sure that she was always okay. For example, with our Burmese, our first cat we had, when we would go on vacation as a family, my parents and I would actually hire the vet, the local vet, to come to our home and stay there with the cat while we were gone, so that if anything went wrong, if she needed anything, we would have very capable hands right there to take care of her. We didn't want to board her at an animal shelter. We didn't want to rely on a neighbor kid to come in and feed her and take care of her. We wanted to make sure that it was somebody who really, really knew how to treat cats and how to take care of cats that would watch over her. And even then, we barely ever went on vacation because we didn't want to be away from her. She would cry herself hoarse by the time we got back because she missed us so much. So to me, you know, when you have an animal, it's a full-time job and a lifetime commitment, I guess, is the most important thing to convey. We would never, ever give up our cats. Always, you know, they're there. They're ours. We would no sooner give up a child than we would give up a cat.
Now, your dad was very attached to Ting. Could you talk a little bit about your dad and what happened when he passed?
Sure. He was a very gentle man, and he adored that cat, and she adored him. She's gray, but even if she hadn't been gray, you know, she's his shadow. She was always his shadow. She would follow him from room to room. And I remember so many times when my father would be walking upstairs, and he'd turn around, and he'd see her following him, and then he'd turn to look at me or my mom to make sure that we were seeing it too, because any good thing, my dad loved to share it. My dad had a quadruple bypass about 15 years before he died, and it didn't go very well. Not all of the grafts took, so he didn't have a lot of energy. He was not a well man physically, but Ting seemed to almost know that somehow and adjust herself accordingly. She would have all kinds of shenanigans around him, but it was more to entertain him. And she would be able to sense when he was sort of at his limit and when he just needed a calm presence beside him, and she would be that for him.
Now, when your father passed, you and your mom were truly grieving. And it was a very, just the way that you wrote about it, I can personally relate to how you felt. But Ting also reacted. Could you just share about that time? I know that it's painful, but Ting's reaction really just showed that love between your father and her.
Well, when we first came home from the hospital, my mom and I, after my dad had died, I remember so vividly her coming to the top of the stairs to greet him and then looking and seeing that he wasn't there with us, and she just turned around and walked upstairs. Over the course of the next several weeks, even months, we did see a dramatic change in her mood and her behavior. She slept a lot more than she used to sleep. She seemed sort of listless and restless. She just wasn't as happy of a cat as she had been when she had him to pal around with. And, you know, it taught me that animals grieve. they absolutely grieve. She absolutely missed him. And I don't know that she was able to process it intellectually in the way that a human would be able to do, but you could just tell she was a different cat then. Eventually, she became more like her old self. And it's funny because it very much mirrored the grieving process that my mother and I went through. We struggled for quite some time, and we still think of him every day, both of us. But, you know, life does become easier. I'm not going to say it becomes better, but it becomes easier as time passes.
I thought that was really important that you wrote about that, because I know many people can relate to losing someone that they love, and animals do grieve. So, you know, just your acknowledgement, I thought, was really, really important. Now, a little bit later on, you write about how Ting becomes ill and all of a sudden starts experiencing fainting spells.
Yeah.
Can you describe what happened and what things you checked for before you decided to take her to the vet? Because I thought that was really smart.
Well, she was sitting on a pillow one day on the ground, you know, low pillow, and she just tumbled off it. And then a couple seconds later, sort of came to, but it was, you know, it was a very unusual thing. And at first we thought that maybe she'd just fallen asleep on the pillow and fallen off it in her sleep. We weren't unduly alarmed. But as the day wore on, she did that a few more times. And we started to realize that they were fainting spells. And immediately we thought, my gosh, could she have ingested some sort of poison or some sort of medication? So we went around and looked at everything and even, you know, Googled certain plants that we had in the house to make sure none of them were poisonous. We wondered if perhaps she had gnawed on one of those. You know, we looked to make sure that the lids were screwed on tight, the aspirin bottle, and, you know, all of that stuff, and just could not figure out what had happened. But it was clear that it wasn't a temporary thing, that she really was having some sort of a problem. And so we took her to the vet, and the vet measured her heart rate, you know, just by listening to her through a stethoscope, and looked at us kind of quizzically and said, wow, it's really low. And we said, how low? And she said, low like a dog's heart low, because apparently a dog's heart rate is much, much slower than a cat's. So they ran some tests on her, and then our vet, Karen Belden at Bulger Animal Hospital in North Andover, Massachusetts, came in to the room and looked more serious than we'd ever seen her look. And she said, well, you know, something's going on. We need to have an EKG done for Ting. So we then brought Ting in. She had an EKG, and we found out that she had a thing called second-degree AV block, which is a very serious heart condition, where you faint and you could not wake up from one of those faintings. Dr. Belden told us that it meant that Ting needed a pacemaker.
So can you talk about the actual pacemaker itself? I thought it was quite interesting that there's one size that fits dogs, fits humans, and cats.
Yep. They don't make special pacemakers for animals, not even little tiny 7-pound cats, which is what Ting is. It is truly one size fits all, and it is a human pacemaker that we ended up having implanted in Ting. We had no choice. I mean, she was 14 at the time, but, you know, the option was wait and let her continue passing out and hope that it doesn't kill her, or take action and get a human pacemaker for her. It's a pretty good size pacemaker. I mean, it's not small, but they're able to implant it under the animal's flank and then internally connect the cords as they need to. And, you know, it was a touch-and-go surgery for her. Her heart rate really plummeted while she was there on the table, but our very smart cat cardiologist at Angel Animal Medical Center here in the Boston area had actually dropped a pacing wire through her artery in her neck, just so that if they needed to give her a quick pace, they would be able to do that even before they had the pacemaker secured. And they did end up needing to do that. And thank goodness our vet had been so careful and had that backup plan, because they had to use it. And then our vet came out of the surgery room and flashed us two giant thumbs up, and we knew that Ting had made it through and that she was going to be okay.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Now, with her recovery, it was not a very fast process, mm-hmm. but you do write about something that I feel is very important to the listeners to know, and that's about her purring. Could you share what information you found out about the ability or the healing ability that a cat's purr has?
There is some research to suggest that purring not only can heal a cat, but that it can also heal a human being. I don't think that such things are impossible. It is interesting to me that, you know, cats can sort of self-soothe with a purr, but also on sort of a biological level, there is a physical good that comes to a cat from purring. And they believe a physical good that can come to human beings from hearing a cat purr. There's also been a lot of research to suggest that people who have cats tend to have a lower risk of a heart attack or a stroke because cats reduce your blood pressure and they calm you. And so I think of Ting as sort of our little medicinal cat.
Bravely write about being diagnosed with MS. Could you talk about
years
that?
Here.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I was healthy as a horse. I mean, I didn't even have a primary care physician. I was in such great health. I was always that person at the office who, when everybody else got the flu, I didn't get it. And people used to joke about it and say, oh, what does it take to get you to take a day off? But I never missed a day. I was so healthy. And then one day I woke up and my left leg was numb. And I thought, oh, that's kind of odd, but I'm sure it'll work itself out. And then the next day my left arm was numb. And I thought, gosh, I wonder if I've pinched a nerve. How strange. Didn't do anything about it. Next day the right side of my face was numb. And the day after that my tongue was numb. And then I thought, you know, something's going on here. In the back of my mind, I still rationalized it, as people, I think, do when they have signs of something seriously wrong with them. I thought, you know, gosh, maybe I had grapes that had some pesticide on them, or maybe there was something in that new tea that I've tried that I'm allergic to. You know, I thought maybe it's just an allergic reaction. But after a few days, I realized I really need to get myself looked at. And because I didn't have a primary care physician, I walked into a local walk-in clinic, and they immediately turfed me to the hospital, the ER, and then they turfed me to a neurologist. And within 24 hours, I was getting the diagnosis that I had multiple sclerosis. So it was a really big surprise.
I know that it's very personal, but for the listeners that are out there that are not quite about dealing with MS, do you have anything that you'd like to share with them?
Sure. I mean, I think the way that you approach your own MS is going to be different for every person, and that's fine, and that, you know, you should just trust your gut as to what is right for you and best for you. I have chosen to live my MS out loud. You know, it's not something that I did wrong to make me end up with this disease. There's no shame in it. I'm proud of the way that I've handled it, and I am willing to talk about it and am out there talking about it. It's no big secret to me. You know, it's a fascinating disease, as crazy as that sounds, but I'm even more fascinated by everything that's being done right now on the in efforts to find a cure for it. And if a cure isn't found soon, they do seem to be making at least a whole lot of progress in finding ways to regenerate myelin, which is the sort of protective tissue that surrounds your nerve fibers, and that's what MS eats away, that myelin, that protective tissue. They're making a lot of strides toward being able to regenerate that myelin. So even if they can't cure MS, they might be able to repair the damage that MS does. So there's so much hope. As my neurologist put it, as crazy as it sounds, it's a great time to have MS. And I truly do believe that. And I truly do believe that a cure will be found in my lifetime. And if it isn't, then I will just do my best to live my life with MS the way that I would live my life without MS. Just full tilt and normal.
Lisa, you are such an amazing person. I've known you for years. You are a beautiful woman who has such an incredible mind, and your heart is just golden. I just want to say thank you for writing this book, for sharing your own personal journey with the readers, with me, with everybody who meets you and learns about your story. And to just say, you know, please, by all means, I would love for you to come back on the show if you ever write a book, another book or a sequel to this. And I wish you all the best with this book, and I hope that you reach so many people.
Thank you so much, June. I've loved talking with you over the years, and especially today, one-on-one like this has been great.
Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Please pick up a copy of Liz's book, The Good Luck Cat. It's available. Make sure that you write a great review, because I know I have a great review that will be posted. So please, by all means. And Lissa, do you have any other information that you'd like to share with the listeners?
I hope folks will follow me on Twitter. It's at Lissa, L-I-S-S-A underscore Warren. And I do very much hope that you'll go out and get yourself a copy of The Good Luck Cat. It's good bibliotherapy and a lot of funny tidbits about cats there, too. So you crazy cat ladies out there, I'm one of you. Read the book. You'll like it. You'll relate.
Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.